You had mentioned from a very young age you had found solace in animals or connection with animals, and I was hoping you could just start by talking to us a little bit about that.
I think that animals have been this constant through my life where, you know, I've really had this close belief and connection that animals are kind of always going to be there for me. And it's turned out that way. Very early on, I had animals in my life. So dogs in my house and, you know, that I've had really amazing interactions with, one who even saved my life. You know, others that, you know, have grown into, there's a horse that I was very connected with at an early age that led me into really wanting to be with horses and, just a lot of different experiences that have been really powerful.
Wow. Can you share a little bit about the dog who saved your life? Cause I got goosebumps when you said that.
Yeah. My dog, when I was growing up, her name was Cha-Cha. And I actually had gotten a hold of a bobby pin and I had stuck it into an electrical socket. And it threw me back and I passed out. And the dog, my mother told me later that the dog had jumped on my chest and had licked my face until I came to, because she came in and she thought that the dog had done that to me. You know, she thought that the dog had knocked me over and, you know, and was jumping on me. But what had happened was, and then she saw that the pin, bobby pin, was in the socket.
Okay.
And so it became clear that the dog was trying to help me.
Wow.
And so that was a really, I was young. I think I was 3.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. 3 or 4, somewhere in there.
So, you know, I'm wondering then what did it mean to you when, you know, you've had this connection with animals and you found Gentle Barn and you realized like, I can volunteer here. And then later, like, I can work here. Like, can you tell me what was that like in your life?
Yeah, I was going through a very difficult time in my life. I was going through a divorce and it was a very ugly divorce. My wife had had borderline personality and she was really struggling in her life and it was very aggressive and bad for me and bad for the kids and for my daughter. And I, you know, in leaving that relationship, finding solace in the Gentle Barn was really quite amazing. It was something that was really powerfully needed in my life. My first rescue that I did with the Gentle Barn was a horse named Scout, who's actually on me. That's Scout.
She is beautiful. Okay.
He's a boy.
Oh, and yes, he, sorry.
Yeah, no, it's okay. And he needed rescue. I had been out. He was in a vacant lot, and I was laying down, and it was raining, and it was really strange to me that there'd be a horse laying down in the rain like that. It was a very short wall. So I kind of went over the wall to go check on this horse. And, I'm not really sure if I scared him more or he scared me more. But he jumped up when I got close and, startled each other, I guess. And, long story short, I pulled him out of that situation and brought him, actually around the corner from the Gentle Barn because I was new and I didn't want to tax the Gentle Barn and I didn't want to put that on Ellie. And I just really wanted to do something good for this horse, but do it on my own, I guess. And so I found a little boarding facility that was just right around the corner and his feet were long and his back was swayed and he had bad teeth and he just needed a lot of care. He was arthritic and he looked like he was just not doing well. And he was emaciated and, you know, really, really struggling. And I saw him through it and saw him through the process of healing, but in doing so was healing myself through this, you know, situation I was going through. And also that in that time, becoming closer with Ellie and the Gentle Barn. She used to take one of her horses and walk with me with Scout to heal him.
Okay.
And it was just a very powerful time.
I think Ellie wrote a really beautiful blog when you turned 50 and she's like, he is a hero for everything that he has done for me, for the animals, for kids?
Well, I'll just start by saying that I don't see myself that way. Hero is a tough badge to wear. You know, I love animals. It's my mission in my life, and I care deeply for their, you know, welfare and the way that it's going to, over time, you know, correct our, you know, problems on our planet, you know, for people to become more kind to animals. But I will say that I've rescued, I guess, about 98% of the animals at the Gentle Barn. Have a lot of stories. There's many that are on YouTube and things like that. Everywhere from going into stockyards and slaughterhouses and backyard butchers, you know, individual private situations where there's hoarders. The first big, you know, really big rescue that I did for the Gentle Barn or with the Gentle Barn was, let's see, I started almost 21 years ago. So I think it was about 18 or 17 years ago was, a hoarder that was in Lancaster, California, with 500 animals, on his property and, partnered with some other sanctuaries to, correct that, where I sort of, when I got involved, they sort of backed off a little and I ended up kind of removing the majority of the animals, in the end. It was really an intense experience, and learning how to deal with most of the animals I was working with were dogs. There were dogs, cats, and then there were a lot of farm animals. Another sanctuary, there were many other sanctuaries took some of the farm animals. But then there were all these dogs left, and I said, well, who's going to be working with these dogs? And, nobody had a good answer. So we kind of took that over. And so we placed, we rescued, rehabilitated, and placed, 250 dogs. And there were another 50 or 55 cats, that were hidden on another property that we found. So, you know, going through that process and really being safe about it, being coordinated about it, you know, bringing in, you know, people to help, you know, collaborating with other nonprofits or other sanctuaries or rescues. It was a big learning for me, a big, you know, experience for me to be able to do things in the future that I ended up doing. Wow. One of the other big ones, that I did was, in Ohio, a place called Cadiz, where there was a pound that was going to euthanize 30 dogs because they were outdoors in a tented, you know, sort of enclosure, if you want to even call it that. And they were being frozen. They were freezing to the ground because it was wet and it was cold and they didn't have any shelter other than this like very thin, paper thin tent. And so a celebrity at the time had reached out to a number of different sanctuaries to find someone who could help stop that from happening. And so I get out there very quickly. We stopped that from happening and then tried to discuss the situation with the commissioners there. And they were not pleased to hear from this guy in California who was coming out to tell them what to do. Finally, after a very long process of, you know, sort of convincing them that we can do something good for them here. They allowed, you know, we had stopped all the dogs from going in. We basically stood outside the front of the pound and any dog that was being brought in, you know, owner surrender or whatever, we took over. Wow. But that place only had a little teeny tiny sink about this big. It was like, it looked, resembled like a, maybe like what you would spit into in a dentist office, you know, just a little teeny tiny sink like that. To do all of their washing. It was all cold water, no hot water. They had put all their storage inside in the kennels and the dogs outside in this shelter. So we flip-flopped that and got them a storage container and got the dogs to be able to be inside and the food to be outside. But we got them a hot water heater. We did new copper piping. We got them that storage unit. We removed their gas chamber. And then when we left, they were a no-kill shelter from that point forward.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, and I just hear that, and the good you did is amazing, but I hear the conditions and I shudder, because it's like, you know, these animals don't have a choice, as you know, and how long had they been there in those conditions before you figured them out, you know, it out, and you could.
Yeah.
I can only imagine that you've learned so much from these animals about resilience and rebounding. Like, can you share some of those lessons?
Well, my better half, Ellie, who's our founder, she is an absolute expert in healing animals and children. And the process of watching an animal come out of the darkest places that humanity has to offer. And you know, when you do what I do, you see those things, right? You're not just going and rescuing an animal at the pound. You know, we're talking about people who are doing horrible things to animals, you know, that, and you know, the bigger the facility, the more neglect, the smaller the facility, the more abuse. And so we take these animals out, they're in whatever condition that they're in, it's not good. You know, I bring them back to the gentle barn. And I start in the process with Ellie, but then she kind of takes over with the healing process, and we get the animals to a place where they're, you know, I would say like 80% good. And then we connect them with children or people in the community that need help, need support, need, you know, therapy, need cow hug therapy, need, you know, any kind of animal therapy where they're connecting with animals in such a positive way. It heals them, and it also heals the animals more. Because there's a human trust issue, right? So the animal doesn't trust humans. So bringing these people in and allowing them to kind of work together with the animals is like so positive for them, but it's also just amazing for the animals. Then watching them heal from that and getting to the point where they can just be a regular part of our program, where people can come in and, you know, now there's a focus on, you know, telling their story in an effort to teaching people about veganism and choosing a kinder way of life and, you know, really being aware of what their dollar is, you know, affecting when they go in to spend their money on things. They're the ones that are telling the industry what they want, what they don't. So that's what they then become a part of, and also continue in our peace enhancement program, which is, you know, healing people as well as the animals. So for me, what your question was like, what's it like? And what, you know, for me, watching that process, seeing an animal come in such dire need and a child come in such dire need and watching them have this like healing together, you know, it's why I do what I do. You know, it's what fuels my soul.
I was very excited when I saw that there was a healing center as well as a sanctuary. What is this healing process like? Is it, what's challenging about it? You know, how do you find the strength as a healer to, you know, when you're dealing with beings that have trust issues and, you know, trauma, and then you have to kind of absorb that while staying calm and staying, you know, strong for them. Like, what has that been like for you, and how have you grown over the years?
I think what was most brilliant, and I don't want to take this away from Ellie, because, you know, Ellie really is the one that, you know, really established this healing process that we go through. I of course do it too, and I'm very, you know, familiar with all the steps of the healing process. What I'll say to you is, and I don't know how much you believe in this, but there's an energy behind everything. And I find that the more we step out of it as humans, you know, just stepping out of the healing process and allow the animals to do the work, the less of those kinds of things happen. Mm. So like how's a person going to be angry with a cow that's sitting there saying nothing and available to hug them and give them their good energy and positive experience if I'm not saying anything, you know? So what we specialize in are people, mostly children, but also adults, who are so far gone or in trouble that the couch therapy or human therapies or things like that aren't enough and don't work. You know, if you think about it, like a 12 or a 13 year old kid that's, you know, being you know, targeted to get into a gang and, you know, has been sort of dabbling now. You know, remember, these ages are starting a lot younger now, starting with, you know, 12, 13, 14 year old kids that are just struggling to stay even just, you know, sober, you know. You put that kind of a kid that's lost their family, that's dealing with gangs, that's dealing with drugs, that's, you know, all of these kinds of at-risk things, and stick them on a couch and try and get them to talk about, you know, what's wrong. First of all, I don't think they even know, you know, these are pre-verbal issues, you know, that are coming from child, from infancy, you know, all the way up in their young life, where they don't know what's wrong. They just know they're angry, and they just know that something's off, and they have no idea what to do about it. And they don't want to talk to you. They don't want to talk to me. They don't want to talk to an adult. An adult is what's the problem. You know, they're being abused, or they've been lied to, or they've been, you know, left or dumped. So the answer is, when we tell the animal story, and our job is to pay attention and connect the animal story with a child's story,
okay,
or a person's story. And once you've done that, there's a bond. It doesn't take a long time, and it's not an obvious big noisy thing. It's just, you know, this kid was taken away from their family, and this animal was taken away from their family, and now that bonds them. And we just tell the story, and these kids run up and go, "Tell me that story again." And, you know, they want to connect with an animal. They want to see that this fuzzy-eared cow is just like them, and they can be in their life together in a positive way. By the way, there's not enough sanctuaries and rescues doing this. You know, it's one thing that I can tell you that I want to bring to other sanctuaries and to show them the way on, because it's essential to the healing of our planet.
When you say there's not enough of this, do you mean just like sanctuaries in general, or sanctuaries that are bringing in the human element and using the animals? Both. Okay.
Both.
Why do you feel like there aren't enough sanctuaries doing this?
And I don't think that they have the kind of training or experience that maybe Ellie and I have. We did about 12 years of continuing education to really understand how to bring this kind of connection to the people that are, you know, coming as part of our program. So that's why we try and work with, you know, sanctuaries that way. And we try and train people who are, you know, coming into a sanctuary, new sanctuary experience.
I wanted to ask you about the word gentle in Gentle Barn, and how gentleness plays such a huge role in, it sounds like, your healing process there.
Well, the name 100% came from Ellie when she was a child. She definitely would dream about it, doodle about it on her arm, on paper. She would talk about it with anybody that she could think of. The thing about the word gentle, though, is it's the essence of everything we do. So, you know, being kind and gentle to others, being kind and gentle to yourself, finding a way to be able to relay the message that we want to relay in a gentle way. We don't see ourselves as activists. We see ourselves as advocates. We don't behave like an activist. We, you know, I think there's room for it. I think that activism is important, and that's definitely something that many organizations do. But, you know, in our world, we don't want to create pain in someone to correct pain. So what I mean by that is, if we're considering the fact that in our planet, that factory farming is the number one problem that we have in as far as climate change, as far as, you know, people's personalities and their aggression, energy, you know, all of those things. If we want to just say, you know, that's the main issue, factory farming, right? Yeah. Then, and I go out there and I yell at somebody in an activist kind of way, I yell at them, you know, you need to do this, and I'm judging them and shaming them and, you know, all those kinds of things. Well, I'm hurting them to get my point across. So Ellie and I very early on decided that was not the way that we were going to go. That we didn't want to, we did some protests, we did things like that, you know, early on. but we realized it just wasn't what we wanted to do. We wanted to, you know, fight kindness with kindness instead of fighting fire with fire.
Sure. Absolutely.
And again, I'm not saying that there isn't a place for that. Sure. But I think that our communities, I think that our planet kind of knows what vegan is now. Not maybe all everybody, but I think a large percentage of our population know what vegan means and what it is. It's a household word now. Mm-hmm. And so I think now it's just a matter of educating people and really showing them the way.
Yeah. And I think on your website, it mentioned that a lot of the visitors you have come to the Gentle Barn are willing to try veganism or get some more plant-based food into their diets, and that was a point of real pride for you all. And
we're basically saying, come out and meet the animals, learn their stories. You know, we're not saying come out here, learn how to be a vegan. You know, that's not what we want to do. However, once they get here, they're going to learn about, you know, their stories. They're going to learn about where they came from, right? So if it's a cow, they're going to learn about that they came from a slaughterhouse, or they came from a backyard butcher, or, you know, whatever. And in telling that story and then connecting them with this puppy dog in front of them, mm-hmm. you know, they can understand it and they can connect with it better. And so I think that, you know, just in that, you know, we're not trying to talk to people who already get it. We're trying to talk to people who don't. Okay. And we're trying to introduce them through the things that we offer, that there's a better way. And it's not because we're shaming you or judging you or giving you a hard time. I was, you know, a meat eater, big meat eater until 30 years old. So how can I judge somebody who's 25 that's coming in here? And, you know, so I just need to give them the information, and I need to do it in a way that really connects them. And we believe that really connecting has to happen in front of an animal. And I mean, not all the time, of course. You know, people can watch a video or a movie or whatever, but you know, we believe that giving as many experiences while they're at the Gentle Barn, to hug a cow, to give a pig a tummy rub, to cuddle with a turkey, to hold a chicken, to witness their habitats and see what they eat and be around them, go down after seeing all the animals and have a Beyond sausage or a Beyond burger or whatever, and, you know, or a veggie, whatever, and learn that there are amazing snacks and amazing products and amazing things that you can have in your life that never hurt anybody to have them. Mm-hmm. And I think that when we go with that energy and we go with that way of thinking, and we're close to the city. I think that's a big problem that a lot of sanctuaries have, is they try and go buy these big properties with lots of land. And they're 3, 4, 5 hours out of the city. Who are they talking to? You know, I don't even understand that. I mean, even if there's a small population where they are, that's not enough. You know, they need to be 30 to 40 minutes or an hour tops out of a city, so that out of a major metropolis, so that they can really, you know, get in there and teach people the right way. In a kind way, in a gentle way. Well, Ellie, you know, Ellie founded the Gentle Barn in 1999, and you know, very early on, within that first year, brought in her first cow, who I fell in love with too. Her name was Buddha.
Aww.
And the connection that Ellie had with Buddha was very intimate and very close. And she would go out and she would feel sad, or she would be struggling, and she would go and sit with Buddha, asking her questions, just, you know, like talking out loud, you know, how am I going to do this? You know, I really want to bring this to the world, but I don't know how, and, you know, things like that. And Buddha, who was just incredible, would wrap her neck or her head around Ellie. Oh. And she would embrace her, and Ellie would hold her back. And it developed from there.
Okay.
And Ellie's favorite saying is, you can't have a bad day after giving a cow a hug. And what I witnessed, though, was, even in myself, was there's this aura around them, this warmth. Like, you can go out there in a cold, cold day, and you can sit next to a cow, and their heat of their body and their energy just will encompass you and hold you and embrace you. Horses are that way too. And, you know, they're absolute healers. And so in wanting to share that with the world, Ellie and I, when I came in, we started a campaign and actually printed shirts that said, you know, I hugged a cow today, or hug a cow, or whatever. And it was, she gave out about 300,000 hugs before she died. And, you know, people would come in and we would immediately say, well, you know, the first thing we do at the Gentle Barn is we go and we hug cows. And it was therapeutic and it was wonderful. And it's interesting because there's someone, I think, I don't know if it was in Norway or somewhere, had said that they were the originators of cow hug therapy. And it's funny because they started about 19 years ago and we were doing this, you know, 22 years ago.
Wow.
And, you know, but it's not a competition. It's just, it was about, you know, this intimate, close, deep connection. You know, the Native Americans have hugged cows for a long time. I think that there's a difference though, when you're talking about that, you know, we were approached by a dairy the other day about like, how do we start cow hug therapy at our dairy? And we're going like, I think you might be missing the point a little. You know, I think that, you know, there's an energy that has to happen for this to really be successful and effective. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's missing when you're taking from the animal and then killing them. You know, I think that, you know, if they feel safe and they feel loved and then they exude this love, I think that that's where it really comes powerfully.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really interesting. I wouldn't have known how to handle that. you know, I wanted to ask too.
We gently told them no.
Okay, good to know. you know, how when you're working with both the kids in particular and the animals, do you see similarities between the healing process?
I think that that people have a harder time healing because of language.
Mm.
I think that we're also meant to be very judgmental of ourselves. And I don't think that animals have that.
Okay.
So I think that animals have an easier time healing, from abuse and neglect more so than a human has to learn from abuse or to heal from abuse and neglect. Mostly for that reason. I think that we're all very similar in that we all want love. We all desire, you know, being cared for. I think that we, you know, we need the same things in life. We need food, we need water, we need, you know, like all those different kinds of things. And if you're comparing like a mammal to a mammal, you know, that obviously the needs are very similar, you know, not too cold, not too hot. So I think that we're all very similar in those respects. You know, the similarities that have been presented, you know, between humans and pigs and, you know, things like that. Yeah. And, you know, we know that. We know that pigs are so similar and so close to human, and chimpanzees are so, you know, similar and so close to human, but we do the worst things to them. And so like knowing that they're going to suffer and knowing that they're going to have a hard time and knowing that they're going to be put through, you know, just trauma and horribleness. But I do think that they heal better and they heal faster. Some of the stuff that we've seen with this, you know, we just recently did a rabbit rescue. Hmm. And, you know, some of the things that we've seen with their healing process has been pretty amazing, and how quick they are to trust and, you know, things like that. So,
okay.
I will tell you though, that the fastest way in my experience to see a human heal who has been neglected or has trust issues is by an animal doing it. You know, the rabbits have been a really neat learning experience, and watching them go through their physical healing and then their emotional healing and how quickly they are doing it. We had them up at our healing center on another property, and that healing center is really made for larger animals, you know, maybe goats and sheep being the smallest, just because of the size of the building, you know, the temperature changes. Although we do have temperature control, you know, it's not as good. Okay. as obviously in the office here. And so we decided that we would remove the conference tables and push everything aside, and you can see that they've kind of taken the entire space. So
how many of them do you have in there?
There are 18, I believe, right now.
Wow.
We still are trying to place them. I think we have four more that we need to find homes for. We're not releasing them yet because they're still in their quarantine and healing process. But
wow.
But that's going well. So
wow. So I wanted to switch tack a little bit and ask you, because, you know, I think one of the things that gave me hope was when I was reading a little bit about Ellie's story, and she mentioned that Gentle Barns started as like half an acre in her backyard. And then now if you look at everything you have, you know, whether it's the visits to the sanctuary, the three different locations, you know, the peace enhancement program, like everything that you all have. And when you came into the picture, and it sounds like you really empowered her to make her vision manifest, like, did you have conversations about, like, we want to create a sanctuary? What is that? What does that look like?
Ellie and I, the reason we're really good partners is because, first of all, she's just absolutely brilliant. She's a visionary. You know, I would be lying to you if I said that I came up with, you know, really any of the beginning. I don't know that she wanted to have a sanctuary, you know, growing up. I think she wanted to help animals.
Okay.
And that's what I wanted to. We took different paths, you know, where she was going more down the roads of therapy or therapist, you know, and going down the road of how to heal and working with, special needs youth. And she spent a long time learning, you know, about animals and focusing on that. So, you know, and I was going the other direction, which was more on the business side and, you know, nonprofit, you know, work and learning about I'm a business builder. So, but I also realized that it wasn't about that for me. You know, it wasn't about business for me. It was about, you know, you learn everything in your life to get to this moment. And I think that that's what happened when I walked into the Gentle Barn, you know, and I think Ellie knew that. And I think I saw her brilliance and I saw what she had and I realized I was home. And I think that putting our two brains together where the first thing I think I remember her saying to me about what she wanted for growth of the organization was just that. It was, I want to open a Gentle Barn in every state so that everybody can see how amazing animals are. And I want to bring this message to the world. And I said, yeah, I want to do that too. And, you know, so I think that kind of conversation and, you know, well, you, if you want that, you know, you need a website and it can't be like a little trinkety thing, you know, and you need brochures and you need to be able to have a program that, you know, allows you to contact people and you need to, you know, look at this new thing called social media, you know, like, you know, nobody, you know, at that time, you know, Facebook came in and it was like, what's that? Or MySpace, you know, and things back in the day. And, you know, so my thing was, you know, helping her with that. And also in development, I remember on a Sunday, we had just, you know, we had just opened up and it was probably like my third or fourth Sunday being there. And it was like $5 donation per person to come in. And they were, you know, they'd have a little tour of the little half acre backyard. And, you know, this person walked up to Ellie and said, you know, had $100 bill and said, I'd like to make a donation. And Ellie said, oh, no, you paid your $5. Thank you so much. You know, we really appreciate you being here, but you don't need to give anymore. And I said, hey, Ellie, you mind if I talk to you for a quick sec? You know, and she came over to me and I said, hey, you know, can I show you a different way of how to handle something like that? She was like, oh, yeah, okay. And we walked back over this person was still holding it in his hand. And I said, can you put your hand out and say thank you? You know, and so I mean, I'm not saying that in an effort to say something less of Ellie. That's what I brought to the table that, sure. You know, when somebody comes and they want to support your work, not only are they supporting your work and doing something good for you, but they're doing something good for themselves and they want to feel good and they know they're not doing it. Yeah. You know, they're doing whatever they're doing, but they're not rescuing animals, but they know you are and they want to support you doing that. So you're almost robbing them from not being a good receiver, you know, and So I think that, you know, giving and receiving are part of every organization. And until, and that's something I bring to the table that I want to bring to the table for more organizations, because I think that's an area where a lot of people struggle. Sure. That run organizations. What sanctuary means to me is a place of solace and a place of recovery and a place of safety. Mm. Working with single mother outreach and working with, you know, the women who have been through drug trafficking and human trafficking and, you know, seeing how broken down they are, and the gay population, you know, people who come in that, you know, LGBTQ, that have nowhere else to turn and nowhere else to go and have hidden in a closet their whole life and feel terrible and can't talk to their parents and can't be in public in a particular way are safe here. You know, people who have all different kinds of belief, as long as they're centered in kindness, have a place here.
Yeah.
And you know, we are a woman-run organization. We believe deeply in equality. We believe deeply in our kindness and gentleness to things we don't understand. And we want to be the ones to talk to people about the things they don't understand and how to receive that and understand it. And
I saw that you were a vegan chef, and I know that like vegan lifestyle is important to General Barn. And I wanted to ask you a little bit about that, you know, hearing that you were an omnivore till age 30, and then like, what made you decide to shift to eating plant-based? And, you know, did you notice any changes in your mindset or in your body or your health after you had decided to commit to that?
Well, the Gentle Barn, I mean, you know, I became vegan at the Gentle Barn. It was because of a chicken named Olaf, who I called Mr. Olafson, just as a funny thing. But Mr. Olaf, when I would walk in the gate to the barnyard, so it was basically like the house and then a yard and then the barnyard. And I would walk into the barnyard and he would be all the way, he was a little rooster, and he'd be all the way on the other side of the barnyard. And he would hear my voice or notice that I walked in, and he would run all the way across the barnyard to me. And I don't think in my life, aside from my child, that I ever had that experience with anybody else. I mean, sure, I've had dogs maybe do that and whatever, but this was an animal that I had no connection with, that I had no understanding of, that I didn't see like a dog or a cat. I just didn't have that connection. And to have this being that was completely different than me and not a dog or whatever, have that experience with me was like mind blowing to me. And he would peck my feet until I picked him up. And if I put him down after I picked him up, he would peck my feet again. He just wanted to be with me. And I didn't see him doing that to other people. It was just the connection that he and I had. Well, one day I had come in, it was a few weeks later, and he didn't come running. And he was missing. And long story short, we ended up finding that he really loved the pigs and he used to sleep on top of them.
Okay.
And I guess he had fallen off in the middle of the night or something, and the pig had rolled over on him, which I had never seen before that and I've never seen since then. But that was just something that happened, and it killed him. And it's interesting because, you know, you think about these things later in life and you go, well, why did that happen? Well, that happened, in my opinion, and not to be selfish, for his life, because his life was very valuable. But if it's any consolation, it happened because he showed me, and I've been here for 20 years and I've made difference in, I don't know how many animals and people. Okay. So he died. And I was very angry. And Ellie did a little, you know, ceremony for him and things like that. And I was just angry. And she's like, what's with this guy? Like, why is he so angry? And like, she thought like I barely knew him, you know, but we just had this bond. Mm. I ended up leaving. And that next day, I was actually in the grocery store. And I was standing there over, it was actually, I think it was, it wasn't a Whole Foods yet. I think it was a Miss Gooch's, because that was before Whole Foods. And I was standing over by the prepared foods and saw the rotisserie. And I saw these rows of chickens going in a, you know, cooking in this thing. And I mean, I feel it now. I broke down like a ridiculous child having a screaming, crying tantrum in the middle of this market, to the point where they were about to call an ambulance for me because they thought, like, I was just weeping and weeping and weeping. And I had realized that these animals that had saved my life, and that and there are other stories that, you know, we hadn't talked about, that, you know, these animals had saved my life many times and were innocent. And it just smacked me like a 2x4 to the head. And I, that was where I, you know, dedicated to, you know, veganism and showing people how amazing animals are. Went to culinary school. I worked at my friend's dad's catering company from, I think I was 14, 15 when I started there, just helping and being around it. And then we ended up doing a lot more together and working together in the catering business. I worked in several restaurants, helped friends start restaurants, and was not vegan cooking at all. And when, you know, coming over to that moment when, you know, I met Mr. Olaf and had that experience, I met another friend who was a raw vegan chef. And he kind of showed me, like, anything that you're wanting, craving, you know, there's a way to manufacture that to make it vegan. Okay. And back then it wasn't as good as it is today. You know, I think I remember back then maybe there was tofurkey and that was about it. And then everything else was either tofu or horrible. Like the cheeses that were available back then were just nasty, but worth it. But just wrong. And, but it just needed to catch up, you know? And so, you know, I started toying with different, you know, products and, you know, ingredients and trying to remake the things that I loved and was pretty successful at doing it and, showing people how to do it and did cooking classes and, potlucks and cooking classes and, just, you know, showing people the way. And it was pretty amazing. And I think what I would say to anybody out there who might hear this that might be a chef is the reason I loved being a chef, the reason I liked going to culinary school, the reason I liked learning that way was because it was challenging. It was anything. I mean, I'm not talking about vegan. I'm just saying the thing I loved about it was artistic. It was a creation. It was something new. It was something I was developing. It was something someone else hadn't done yet. Sure. What I would say to any chef that has a hotel or a restaurant or a catering company or whatever, that first of all, you're responsible for the health of the people you're feeding. If you're simply feeding people things that just taste good because they're meaty or fatty or whatever, you're killing people. Yeah. You're killing people. Yeah. You're responsible for that. Just as much as anybody like a bartender standing behind a bar shouldn't give another drink to somebody who's already drunk. You're responsible for the way that you feed people. And so mixing into, like, hotels, for example, mixing into the menu, the majority of the things that you do, mashed potatoes, even vegetables, don't fry them or cook them in butter. Don't do it. You don't need to do that. You know, steam them, or if you need to cook them in oil. You know, do it a light olive oil or something like that. You don't even need to do that. You know, have you seen an air fryer? Anyway, so, you know, I'm just saying that there are ways that menus can be brought to vegan and just more healthy and have options on your menu. People will choose it not because they're vegan, just because they're good.
Yeah.
You know, and challenge yourself as a vegan chef, challenge yourself as a regular chef to try everything that's out there because it's exciting and different and new. I'm a foodie, man. That was what I wanted to do. I wanted to create things that nobody had tried before. And I have, and it's amazing. And I mean, to be able to, you know, make a cheesecake, I'm going like, what, you know, to make a cheesecake with no cheese. What is that? You know? So
And you're right. I think that just the amount of alternatives now that are out there. I mean, I went vegan twice. I went vegan when I was young and then couldn't. There was just nothing available when I was, you know, a teenager. And now I went vegan like a year ago and I'm like, there's so like, people are like, aren't you deprived? I'm like, no, I can eat anything that you eat pretty much. And it tastes good.
I'm a big dude, you know. I am not suffering for lack of food, okay? As a matter of fact, you asked, one of the things you asked before was you asked about health and you asked about how it affected me when I went to plant-based diet. I'll tell you this. I had an experience. I went into the dentist and they wanted to, they had to give me Novocaine, you know, to work on a tooth. And they had come in, they had taken my vitals, they had done, you know, the different things to make sure I was okay to have the process, and then put the chart on the door. And I was sitting there in the chair, you know, waiting for them to come in. And this woman came in, I didn't know who she was. And she said, she looked at my chart and she looked at me and she went, oh, I think I'm in the wrong room. And she walked out and I was like, oh, that was odd. And she then came back and said, no, I'm in the right room. Are you Jay? And I said, yeah. And she said, oh, I don't mean this offensively, but I was kind of expecting an athlete. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, your blood pressure and your, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I was, so that's the kind of experience I've had. I've always had really, really great, you know, exams and my blood pressure and cholesterol levels and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Although I'm heavy, I have, you know, really great, you know, vitals and things like that. So, and I'm energetic and I don't drink coffee and I don't, you know, eat chemical, you know, things that have chemicals and I eat organic and, you know, I don't use products on my body that are chemical full. I use like, you know, Everyman Jack, for example, is, you know, the main grooming products I use. You know, Ellie uses MyShell and Crystal and Pacifica and, you know, different, you know, naturally, you know, created, you know, products and cruelty free. I mean, like I've got, you know, these rabbits in here, like how can I go and use something that's been tested on now? You know, I can't, you know, and I think all of those things play a role in our health.
And we have covered a lot of ground. So I very much appreciate your time today.
Yeah, really, thanks.
This. Is there anything else you'd like to add that I didn't ask you about?
I would just close in saying that, you know, first of all, starting a sanctuary and, you know, doing this work is not something that should be taken lightly. You know, you don't just, you know, start rescuing a bunch of animals and throw them in your yard and think it's going to work out. You have to have a good plan. You know, find people who are willing to work with you, teach you, mentor you into doing that. I would say that if people have the ability to support sanctuaries, that, you know, it's really the change of our planet that they're working on. As long as they're, you know, a good sanctuary. I mean, that's their mission, is to teach kindness and compassion and to save our planet. So I think that if there's anywhere that needs support, it's there. And I would say that your animals that you have in your home, they want to be treated with love and respect. Talk to them, you know, tell them that they matter. Pet them, don't pat them. They don't like to be hit. And work, you know, really hard in your life to lean yourself towards a vegan diet. You know, try and be compassionate in your life. Try not to hurt anybody to exist on this planet. You don't need to.